When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The information depicted in this podcast is purely for informational purposes only. Please consult your healthcare professional before making any changes to your lifestyle or routine.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Boost Your Biology podcast. My name is Lucas, and I am the founder of Ergogenic Health. Together in this podcast series, we will go underground to explore cutting-edge health and human performance insights that you simply cannot search on Google to help you upgrade your existence. So, without any further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Boost Your Biology podcast. Today I'm joined in with a special guest, Matt Milner. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Lucas. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. You've managed to get up nice and early for this one, hey?
Yeah. I was on call. I'm an emergency specialist back in England, and I was on call. I didn't really realise I was on call in hospital last night, and I got called a couple of times. So I'm a little bit peaky, so bear with me.
That's fine, man. That's fine. Do you want to maybe let my listeners know a little bit about who you are and what you really like to specialise in?
Yeah. Well, I'm an emergency specialist. I started med school back in 1995 back in England. I studied at St George's Hospital in South London, where I did the majority of my practice. Yeah, about 2000, I qualified. And yeah, I did the sort of normal sort of training over the first couple of years as an intern. Then I moved to Australia. I worked in Sydney for a couple of years. I lived in Manly, lived that sort of beach lifestyle, cafe culture, loved it. Begrudgingly came back to finish my training in emergency medicine. Been a consultant now in emergency medicine for 10 years. Yeah, it's probably back when I was actually in Sydney. I was 29 years old. And I realised now I was starting to get a bit older. I started to think about my health, well-being. And that's where I sort of developed the practice that I've got privately now. I run a clinic in England, sort of health, wellness, sports performance, and, yeah, general well-being. And people, they're thinking about their future and how they're going to optimise their life, health span, and longevity. So, in short, that's where I'm at. But, yeah, it all probably started about 17 years ago. In England, it was very different to Australia on how we look at life balance with work. You know, I was working 78 hours a week in England. I get to Australia, I'm working 40 hours a week. I had so much time on my hands to actually spend time on myself and enjoy myself with the company of my friends that I made out there. So, yeah, in a nutshell, that's me. So I run a weekly clinic, and I see a lot of guys, women who want to, yeah, make the best of themselves, really. You know, lose fat, put muscle on, and yeah, just function. So in a nutshell, that's me.
Amazing. Let's have a look at the evolution of, like, you know, the supplement industry, and having a look at an area that you're quite well versed in is like recovery.
Okay, let's do it.
Cool. So do you want to maybe mention some of your sort of go-to compounds when it comes to like aiding recovery from, let's say, training in the gym and things like that?
Yeah, sure. Firstly, yeah, I quite like nighttime formulas. I think they're really helpful. So yeah, things like magnesium, fish oils, vitamin D, the standard ones, creatine, and then goes all the more compounds that affect a multitude of different pathways. So turmeric, ginger, I'm into them. To be honest, I like the majority of people to get their nutrition from food. I'd rather people not take a pill, but do it like our ancestors did, you know, eat and take advantage of the environment as well. I think that would be sort of in a nutshell what I would say.
And in terms of some of the recovery-based sort of peptides, have you worked with many in your career?
It's a difficult one as a doctor to actually condone the use of peptides, you know, because a lot of them, they are still research peptides. But the problem is that pharmaceutical companies won't bring them out because there's no money to be made in a natural compound. This is the issue. So where do we go with them? And you know, there's a lot of, sort of bro science in a few of them in the fact that they've been tested in animals, but they've never really had any research in humans. For instance, like BPC-157, TB-500, there isn't really any human evidence for recovery in them compared to something like PAL-GHK, the copper peptide. Now, there's a lot of work in that, but not overly in the recovery area, but more things like cancer, COPD. So I'd love to sort of condone some of their uses, but I can't at the moment because it would be frowned upon as being a physician.
Mm.
So we just need more human evidence. I think in America, the fact that I think a few of them have been allowed to be used, but I think the problem is that with England, I think we're generally sort of 10 years behind the States and Australia with what's happening.
Yeah.
So I think it's watch that space.
England.
There's a lot of anecdote.
England being behind the US and Australia being 20 years behind the rest of the world.
It's, you know, I couldn't believe those sort of nutrition and food when, you know, it was 2004 when I moved to Australia, and we're a world away in England with what sort of things that we're eating to what you guys were eating. And food actually tastes like food, like I remembered when I was a kid.
Mm.
Like I ate spinach for breakfast in Sydney. I'm thinking this tastes like spinach. I haven't tasted like this for a decade.
Mm.
So it was really interesting.
Mm. Let's have a discussion around osteoarthritis. I know you've had a lot of experience, you know, seeing. So let's discuss like osteoarthritis.
Yeah, my background is I've got quite a passion for this because about 4 years ago, I discovered that I had severe arthritis and I didn't even know I had it. Because I've got a background, I've got a lot of rugby, martial arts, anything contact I like. And I had an arthroscopy for my knee started blowing up, and they found out that I had sort of more to severe arthritis. So I had a tidy up of my cartilage, and it ended up that I was lame from it and in severe pain after that. So I really hit the literature on how I could, you know, help myself recover or even regenerate my knee. Because I was sort of early 40s then, and I was told that I needed a knee replacement. And the thought of that, I just felt that I'd failed in life if I destroyed my body that much. I really wanted to do the best I could naturally to regenerate it. So yeah, arthritis, what is it? Well, it's a degenerative disease of the joints. It affects pretty much any joint, the neck, the spine. Hips and knees are the big ones for us. But yeah, shoulders, elbows. Actually, the word comes from a Greek term, ortho meaning joint and itis meaning inflammation. So it's obviously been going on a few years, isn't it? But I think that was probably from all the athletic things that were going on in Greece, probably not obesity and things like that. But yeah, in a nutshell, that's what arthritis is. It's a degenerative process of the joints.
And so in terms of looking at some of the risk factors associated with its onset,
yeah,
sort of explore some of those.
Yeah, there's a few. Okay. First, you've got obviously age-related changes. You've got wear and tear as we get older, particularly if you're going to do an impact sport like rugby or martial arts, you are going to get it quicker. Then you go on to sort of anatomical variants or malalignments of the bone, you're going to speed up the process. There's genetic factors. It does run in families. I'm not sure that they've really sort of located the gene yet that actually causes it. But there's also some abnormalities of collagen metabolism. So diseases like Ehlers-Danlos loss can cause it. Then you move on to, you know, nutritional deficiencies. It's always something can happen. And part of the age-related process is the fact that we lose our anabolic hormones. You know, testosterone is really important for men, estrogen as well, and particularly women. And then we move on to metabolic disease. You know, metabolic disease causes pretty much everything. Is it chronic inflammation, cancer, Alzheimer's, but it also causes osteoarthritis. So if you've got hypercholesterolemia or you've got type 2 diabetes, obesity, you are going to get arthritis at some stage. So yeah, they're the risk factors for OA.
Mm. Seeing as though you mentioned metabolic syndrome, metabolic disease, let's sort of explore what does that mean to you, and then what are some of the driving forces behind that?
As in people getting metabolic disease or how it causes OA?
I guess in terms of people that are suffering from metabolic disease, how is that process playing out?
With the disease, there's a couple of different pathologies happening. Okay, with hypercholesterolemia, it's actually the cholesterol is toxic to mitochondria. And it actually causes chondrocytes. So chondrocytes are the cells of the cartilage. You know that it causes apoptosis. So cell programmed cell death, raised cholesterol has been shown. And also with type 2 diabetes, there's an energy pathway within cells in the mitochondria called AMP kinase. It's quite trendy, isn't it, in the sort of the biohacking world, this term. Everyone says AMP kinase, don't they? Problem is, with type 2 diabetes, you get a drop in AMP kinase. Now, that makes chondrocytes more susceptible to pro-inflammatory chemicals. So if you've got more pro-inflammatory chemicals and they're more susceptible to it, you get chondrocyte pathology. So that's the basis of metabolic diseases causing OA. I suppose obesity as well, you've got more pro-inflammatory cytokines going around the body as well. So they're all interlinked, those three, and speeding up the process. I suppose if you're overweight as well, you're putting more weight on your joints.
Yeah.
It's simple mechanics.
Makes sense. So then I guess like with that metabolic syndrome, and you mentioned that enzyme AMPK.
Yeah.
Look at some of the stimulators of AMPK, if you know any.
Yeah, there's a few out there. So you've got, firstly, there's actual drugs that do it. So methotrexate will do it. Then there's other things like resveratrol, I'm aware of. NAD, I think that's sort of been the pathway. I believe I think you're probably more of an expert on AMPK than I am, if I'm honest. But yeah. And then there's also what's it called? Yeah, exercise things stimulate AMPK, don't they, from my...
Yeah, yeah. The ones that came to my mind are some of the really cool botanicals. There's one called Gynostemma pentaphyllum from southern China. It's like a really cool tea that does, and then also metformin is the obvious one.
Yeah, metformin, yeah. And bourbon probably does the same as well, I presume.
Yeah. Let's sort of segue back into the nutritional interventions, you know, when we're looking at osteoarthritis, some of the things that you think have the strongest evidence.
Firstly, as we spoke about before, is nutrition is the key, isn't it? It's not necessarily supplementation. It's getting the basics right. So, you know, our forefathers ate properly. It's just getting away from that, you know, the processed foods and eating real food. So, you know, quality proteins. But you got to think about the type of proteins that you're eating, because we just eat so clean now. Chicken breast, isn't it, that the skin's been taken off, or a clean cut of beef. We need to go back to sort of the origins of what we're eating. So, you know, a stew made with beef, calf, you know, and the sort of chicken cuts that, you know, wings, chicken drumsticks. So, you know, you chew all the gristly bits off the bone. People don't do that anymore. And you know, you need those building blocks of collagen to actually make collagen. So I would say that. And then, you know, I think nutrition isn't that complicated in the fact that, you know, if you eat a bit of everything, then you're going to get the micronutrients you need. You know, so just saying the rainbow diet sort of works, isn't it? If you eat your fruit, you're going to get your vitamin C that you need for collagen production. You know, nuts and seeds with your vitamin E, you need that. And then you need all your micronutrients like zinc and things like that. So it's not actually that complicated, I don't think. So I tell my clients anyway. And then you sort of go on to actual, you know, supplementation, things like I think one of my favourites nutrition is MSM. So, you know, methylsulfonamethane. So that's an organic sulfur. I mean, and that comes in food. So it comes in tea, coffee, milk, fruit and veg, grains. And I think it is a wonder supplement. It works on so many different pathways. So firstly, I think sort of one of the big pathways that's an issue in inflammation. So the NF-kappa-B pathway. Yeah, so it's a pathway that occurs with activated B cells. So NF-kappa-B is a transcription agent, goes into the nucleus. It switches on lots of different pro-inflammatory enzymes. So things like nitrate oxidase synthase, cyclooxygenase enzymes, lipoxygenase, and matrix metalloproteinase. Now that's a protein that basically dissolves cartilage. So you've got those four enzymes, and then you've got pro-inflammatory mediators such as interleukin-1 beta, interleukin-6, interleukin-10, and transforming growth factor. Now, this cocktail of different cytokines, chemokines, adhesion factors, etc., they just cause havoc within the joint and cause inflammation, you know, a rush of mediators. MSM inhibits the translocation of NF-kappa-B into the nucleus. And it's weird, the body's got so many different sort of inhibitory mechanisms as well. There's actually an inhibitory protein, I think, to NF-kappa-B. MSM prevents the breakdown of that inhibitory protein. So really quite clever. Mm-hmm. And then MSM also, it increases the antioxidant capacity of the cells as well. But there's a couple of, I know you love all these sort of pathways, NFR2, P53. So you're upregulating all of the antioxidants. And as a result, you get less reactive oxygen species that cause the inflammation. And then it's a sulfur donor. So it helps you make amino acids such as homocysteine, leucine, methionine, and such. And it reduces joint pain and swelling. I think it's the wonder supplement, MSM. I don't think enough people take it. I know it's definitely in my remit.
What sort of doses have you been playing around with?
I think it's 3 grams. I take all of my supplements. Don't quote me on 3 grams. I think it's 3 grams from when I last read. Pretty much everything I take a teaspoon. You know, it comes out about the right dose.
The other thing that's interesting, I was going to say, you're saying it's sort of MSM inhibiting that NF-kappa-B.
It makes
me wonder whether, like, it's a similar pathway to, I guess, how curcumin, I'm sure curcumin also inhibits.
So you go on to those other sort of botanicals. So turmeric inhibits NF-kappa. Majority of the inflammation in OA is NF-kappa-B.
Wow.
Turmeric inhibits NF-kappa-B. And then you've got ginger does as well. And I think, you heard of devil's claw?
Yeah.
Devil's claw is the worst tasting supplement I think there is. I think ginger and turmeric, I don't mind the spice of that and the bitterness of turmeric, but devil's claw, just don't take it. Yeah, I thought I'd try it and I'm not buying it. Turmeric and ginger do the same. There's been a systematic review on turmeric, and I think I think there has been a show that it does help, but it modestly helps in inflammation. But I know you're quite aware that it does come with side effects for some people as well, turmeric. It can cause a fever. It stops some people absorbing iron, particularly if you go over 1,200 milligrams a day.
Yep.
It can cause blood pressure issues, heart rate problems, make your tongue go red, and lose hair. So there's definite side effects of turmeric. But then again, you've got the other benefits, just like ginger. They affect so many different pathways, don't they? You know, dyslipidemia, sugar control, liver detoxification, general inflammation. I think there's something out there for everyone, isn't there, with the gods? There's so many different things put on this planet for us that benefit us. Don't get me wrong, there's other things that are toxic. But, you know, turmeric and ginger, they're low-hanging fruit, aren't they, that they can really help?
Mm.
So they are two of my go-tos.
Awesome. There's something else I wanted to look at is, I guess, the degenerative aspect of cortisol on, you know, joint, bone remodeling and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's been actually shown by, there's a study done on corticosteroid injections, because it's still a standard treatment in England from orthopedic surgeons. What we do, we're going to give you an anti-inflammatory injection for your joint. Okay, so it just scares me when I hear it's still going in 2021. Yeah, so if you put triamcinolone into the joint, I think they showed that it does reduce inflammation within the joint, but you get an effect for about 2 weeks. It's better than placebo, but after 2 weeks, there's no benefit. And corticosteroids are directly chondrotoxic. And yeah, they thin your cartilage, but also they speed up the process of osteoarthritis. So I think, yeah, I can't believe it's still happening.
The rationale there, Matt, is like related to the autoimmune aspect. They're suppressing the immune system. Is that how they look at it?
Yeah, I think it's just adrenaline inflammation. I don't see the rationale. I think it's just the problem is with medicine and sort of orthopedics. I think, you know, you're still getting orthopedic doctors giving people NSAIDs for inflammation in joints when it's actually just not having no benefit at all. You're not actually aiding healing. You're just sort of numbing the pain, aren't you, in a way, and just hiding things and letting things just carry on.
I was going to say, do you want to explain to my audience what those NSAIDs are?
Yeah, so you've got a couple of different types in the medical world that are prescribed. So you've also got the topical NSAIDs, like ibuprofen, diclofenac, et cetera. And then you've got the oral NSAIDs. So the COX enzymes inhibit inflammation, basically. Now, there's a few issues with them taking them orally, is the fact they've got a wealth of side effects. Okay, so if it's got sort of cardiovascular side effects and the fact that you can actually increase your risk of heart attacks, stroke, hypertension. Okay, you've got gastrointestinal side effects and the fact that you can cause gastritis, inflammation of the stomach, ulceration, and have a large gastrointestinal bleed. And, you know, in my emergency work, I've seen this, you know, numerous times. You know, people die. They do die from, you know, catastrophic upper GI bleeds. And then you've got the renal complications, that's renal failure. And definitely, yeah, it alters renal function when you see some people on them, when, you know, do that, check their use and needs. So they don't come without side effects, these drugs. And they have systematic reviews show they have modest effect, okay? And turmeric and ginger have a moderate effect as well. So, you know, there's a balance there. So, you know, why aren't people taking these drugs? But I said it's Western medicine. This is the issue, that we don't get this knowledge at med school. You don't learn about alternative medicine. Yeah, the amount of pharmacology I did was phenomenal. You know, I did 12 weeks of delivering babies. I did half an hour of nutrition at university. Half an hour. I think one of the teachers just put the vitamins up, and they said what each vitamin did. That was my knowledge of nutrition. I don't think it's changed. You know, prevention is the key, isn't it? Prevention is the key. Yeah, getting back to the NSAIDs. And then you've got them topically. I think they're better topically. If I was ever going to prescribe one, which I haven't, to my clients, they're better the fact that you can use a smaller dose. You get less systemic complications from them. They're well absorbed in the majority of cases, you know, to the joint. But I said, yeah, it's not my go-to drug of choice.
Mm. I really would like to go back to those corticosteroids. I want to sort of ask around sort of like the performance enhancing side. Let's look at like professional cyclists, for example.
Yeah.
They're somewhat abusing corticosteroids. Do you understand potentially why they would do that or the mechanism?
I think it's the anti-inflammatory effect. I'm not an expert on this, if I'm honest, but also you get a stimulatory effect from cortisol as well. I think it gets sort of a stimulatory high. You whack a load of cortisol in. I think it's what wakes us up, isn't it? You give them that, I think it boosts them up. Things just don't hurt as much as well. I think that's probably the basis of what they use. But anything that's catabolic, I'm not keen on. So I try not to get involved. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's not. So professional cycling is not my area of expertise. People I see are more sort of strength athletes,
yeah,
rugby, bodybuilding, and things like that.
Well, seeing as though on the contrary, let's look at something that's pro-anabolic, growth hormone. Let's discuss a little bit around growth.
Yeah. Do you know what? There's a couple of interesting studies that have been done on growth hormone, and it's that is intra-articular use in OA. Okay, there was a study on rabbits, I think a couple of years ago, 20 rabbits, male rabbits, they induced OA in these poor rabbits with a collagenase. And then after that, they injected 4-IU of growth hormone. Okay, and then after, I think it was about something like eight weeks, don't quote me on that, they euthanized them. Okay, and over that period, they looked at the level of lameness, and they also looked at the macroscopic and microscopic changes of growth hormone. Really quite interesting. So significant difference in lameness. But when they macroscopically looked at these animals, there was improvements in the OA. Now, the mechanism is sort of not an anabolic or sort of anti-catabolic mechanism, but it increases the amount of what's called fenestrated arteries from the subchondral bone into the cartilage, improving nutrition and oxygenation of cartilage and also stem cell production. Oh. Really quite interesting. And this is probably somewhere that we can go to in humans. Obviously, we need the studies. I'm really quite impressed with this. Problem is getting the right dose in humans and how many times you need to do it. Do you need to be non-weight bearing? There's lots of different combinations. And having to potentially get people in, I think you probably need more than one dose, if I'm honest. I think you probably only need up to about 12 doses. It's just a burden on the health service. And I think that's why, you know, when you come in, you see an orthopedic surgeon here, have a shot of corticosteroid. It's a one-off. It's not a treatment you're going to give multiple times. You know, you can't have a clinic just of people coming in for a shot of GH. But I think it's really encouraging for OA in the future. We just need more trials on it. I think that there's been previous trials to that one in 2019 as well.
Fascinating. So I guess what about there was another modality you've discussed before. Is it hyaluronic acid?
Hyaluronic acid. Yeah, hyaluronic acid, MSM, are two of my go-to compounds. Hyaluronic acid, it's called a proteoglycan. Okay, it looks like a pipe cleaner. Do you know an old-school pipe cleaner that you look like? And what is it? It's sort of a protein sort of backbone with sort of disaccharides that stick out. And what it does is that each hyaluronic acid molecule binds about 1,000 water molecules, and it's produced by the chondrocytes, and it's sort of, it's part of the chondrocyte structure inside them, but also within synovial fluid. So what it does, it increases the volume, the viscosity of the synovial fluid, so you've got better shock absorption, more lubrication of the joint, it boosts the metabolism within the chondrocyte. You get more chondrocyte proliferation. It's anti-inflammatory, and also it inhibits nocioreceptors, like pain receptors in the knee. And it actually has an additive effect. This is intra-articularly if you give it. Okay.
This is not orally.
In combination, Lucas, it's got a synergistic effect. Right. If you take it orally, it acts slightly different. There's another type of receptor. I'm not that au fait of exactly how it works. It's called a toll-like receptor 4, and that is involved inhibiting the NF-kappa-B pathway. Oh. So if you take it orally in conjunction with having it intra-articularly, there's a synergistic effect. Hyaluronic acid, that is a natural compound. They first got it from rooster combs. So that's the like Mohican part of a rooster. Okay. So that's where it came from originally when, you know, it was being given. A lot of rooster combs. And I think it's made by biofermentation now. It's not available in the, I don't know if it's available in the health service in Australia, probably, but it's only privately given here in England. I started that 4 years ago. It's like a eureka moment. The moment that goes in off the end of the needle, you feel like a new person.
Wow.
And then about 2 weeks after that, you feel your joints feel amazing. And then it lasts up to about 6 months within the joint. The problem is, what's it called? As your joints regenerate, you don't produce that good hyaluronic acid. I think it's about 1,000 kilodaltons. That's the size of the molecule. A good molecule, and you get down to about 3,000 in OA, and it just doesn't work when it's that size. You know, the bigger the molecule, the more water it absorbs, the more shock absorption lubrication. But yeah, hyaluronic acid is my go-to, I think, with MSM. They're my two favorite things in, you know, supplements. I suppose it's a supplement, isn't it? You're supplementing it into your joint. So yeah, I do that every 6 months. And I look forward to, well, I don't look forward to having the injection, but because it does come with a little bit of pain and swelling. You know, if you take a paracetamol, I generally ice it, you know, on that night, you're good to go the next day, and you feel like a new person.
That's amazing. The my initial understanding with the hyaluronic acid is more associated with like skin health, though, mostly.
Yeah, because it is the structure of the skin, isn't it, with collagen? Yeah, so people do take it for the skin as well.
Fascinating. Awesome. There was another modality you've discussed. I really don't know much about it, and that's ozone.
Ozone. Yeah. If you Google search ozone in England, there's quite a few places giving ozone. So you give it, you can get medicinal ozone machines. You can actually buy them on eBay, if you know. I think it was really popular, wasn't it, when COVID came. Everyone started buying ozone machines and they're whiffing ozone because it kills COVID. I think it was really popular. ozone's injected intraarticularly as well. Now, it works on the anti-inflammatory pathways as well. Issue is that there's not much sort of scientific data out there. And the studies that have been done, they had so many different controls that it's difficult to actually decipher the information. So they're using PRP, hyaluronic acid, injecting saline into the knee. So the data's not that good. So there's, you know, more studies are needed, but it looks like it is really good analgesic in OA. But the problem is it doesn't last long either, like a cortisone injection. So I'm not sure if we're going anywhere with ozone, to be honest. I think the funkier the treatment, I think more people sort of are clinging to it. It's going to work. And ozone sounds really cool, doesn't it? Injecting ozone into the knee. But I was thinking of getting a medicinal ozone machine and trying it. You know, they're about £700 in England. It's worth, I was thinking of having a tinker, because I do really like, you know, I'm a guinea pig in a way. I definitely am.
Fascinating. Let's sort of segue and discuss a little bit around, I think you noted here, is it mandating or something around TRT?
TRT therapy. Yeah. There was a pilot study done on 18 guys who were hypergonadal, so yeah, on standard TRT treatments. They were given 100 milligrams a week IM of nandrolone. Now, nandrolone is 19-nol testosterone. It's a derivative of testosterone, but it hasn't got a methyl group at the C19 point. Now, that has been shown previously to increase bone density, IGF production, satellite cell muscle production, and also improved tendon health in animals. Now, so with that sort of remit, they gave that 100 milligrams of that IM in conjunction with then standard TRT. And after 8 weeks, there's a couple of different ways of sort of measuring outcomes of OA treatment. So you've got the PVAS score, so it's a pain visual analog score. I think often they have it. You know, you've got all the little different smiley faces, and it's in a row of like the really smiley faces. So there's that, and it's called the WOMAC score as well. That's more of a functional score. So it's called Western Ontario and Macmillan, Massachusetts or something University OA Index. It's a complicated term, but yeah, that looks at functionality. They did that, and at sort of 8 weeks, I think there was a 70% reduction in significant reduction in pain out of those guys, with 30% needing a lot less medication that they were taking, because a significant reduction in things like cocodamol, NZ and such. You know, because there's side effects of things like cocodamol, haven't they? People are tolerant, get constipation. They're, you know, tramadol. They're all nasty drugs these people take. But overall, there's a 50% reduction in pain in taking nandrolone. And I think anecdotally, from yeah, sort of the 21 years I've been involved in the sort of the strength injury, I think a lot of bodybuilders, I think there's a lot of medical, let's say, treatments come from bro science in the fact that these guys are trained anecdotally, things help. I think it probably came anecdotally from bodybuilders that they were taking Nandrolone and like Deca, and their joints just didn't hurt as much. Mm-hmm. So that is a really interesting one for the future as well. TR team involved in Nandrolone, but I think we probably need a bit more work. The fact that it was only 18 guys in that study, but that's definitely another one for the future.
Mm, that's exciting. That's really, really cool. What about something sort of separate, the FGF analog you mentioned?
We're sort of going down the route of, you know, the drug companies and what they're developing. I really like the science behind these sort of things, but the fact that I think we sometimes need to get back to the basics, don't we? It's you know, get back to the nutrition side. You know, don't actually let, well, no, don't get me wrong, I really enjoyed the rugby that I played, and you know, it's given me the sort of area that I have. But yeah, there's a whole myriad of different drugs that are in the pipeline. There's anabolic drugs. I guess spearfermin is called it. Yeah, it's a fibroblast growth factor analog. And what it does, it increases chondrocyte proliferation and the cartilage matrix. So that's a drug that's in the future. And then there's quite a few different. There's an anti-catabolic one. Now, what is that called? Yeah, so matrix myeloproteinase. That's one of the enzymes that breaks down cartilage. There's one of those in the pipeline. There's other anabolic agents. I think a bone morphogenic protein, I think it's called 7, that increases cartilage matrix production.
Mm.
It's just a phenomenal world of where we're going with OA drugs. But, you know, maybe if some of us did, we just use more of these, we were told the hyaluronic acid, the MSMs, the turmerics of the world, we probably wouldn't need these drugs that cost, what, $10,000 a year to have. And maybe you just need to, you know, lose weight, control your type 2 diabetes and things like that, do you know what I mean? Instead of going for all these really funky drugs that cost a lot of money.
Well, you know what's really fascinating, Matt, is I would love to have a discussion around type 2 diabetes with you if it's within your wheelhouse, if you're happy to chat about that. But I'd love to hear what your thoughts are in terms of the nutrition side of, you know, type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, I think it's just an issue with lifestyle, isn't it? What people are doing, that we're just taking in too many simple carbohydrates and not moving enough, isn't it? And there's too much of it. You swamp every organ with sugar. You swamp your fat cells, and there's just too much swimming around, isn't it? And the problem is that sugar is toxic. It's toxic to your brain. It's toxic to your liver when you start getting fatty liver. Your nerves don't like it; they die. Every part of your body does not like sugar. Your eyes, your kidneys, and I think it's a world where we just all live in the fast lanes all the time, don't we, at the moment? And people, they get up, they have, you know, in England anyway, half the population get up, have a cigarette, and they get a Red Bull from a petrol station, and that's their breakfast. And we're just not eating and drinking and moving like we used to. And, you know, did type 2 diabetes actually exist 200 years ago? Probably not. And it's part of the reason why, you know, 100 years ago people started dying of heart attacks and things like that. So it's a massive issue. And I think especially from COVID now, I don't know what it's like in Australia, but half our generation now are a bit, you know, obese. First time we came out of lockdown, I could not believe the size of people. And I think, you know, this is we're going on to a different subject here, aren't we, as well? But I don't think, you know, half these people are going to lose their weight. So, you know, the obesity epidemic, pandemic, whatever you want to call it, you know, over the next 10 to 20 years, and the effect on the health service is going to be phenomenal. So we have to watch this space where we're going.
100%, 100%. Yeah, obesity side of things, I think, it's up to us, people like us, to educate people on, you know, what to do from a lifestyle perspective, diet perspective. you know, even I don't know if you saw that pretty cool study on, you know, comparing 3 15-minute walks to metformin, that, you know, post-meal walk is more effective, you know, more effective than an anti-diabetic drug, which is, you know, fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't actually need it. You know, it's just with your diet as well. You know, you get fish oil into your diet. You know, I love adding, if I work out, I have a teaspoon of cinnamon, Ceylon cinnamons and things like that. You don't need to go down the drug route, do you? You can, ginger is hypoglycemic. I think turmeric has an involvement as well. We don't need to be taking these drugs if you, and is it, it doesn't taste nice, a metformin tablet, compared to having some spicy ginger. You know, as I said before, all of these things have been put on the planet for us, you know, as a benefit, aren't they? It's got to mix and match all of these different
You know,
foods and spices and herbs.
What's really cool, Matt, is like understand when we love to geek out on the mechanisms, like activating some of the same pathways as metformin, like. And even berberine also doing the same sort of
berberine.
Thing.
Berberine. Yeah. Yeah, and it's got an antibacterial effect in the bowel, isn't it? Berberine's got so many different benefits. And it's probably going to increase your lifespan as well and health span if you take it.
Will there be a study on that, though?
I think there's quite a bit of work on berberine, isn't there? Yeah. And the saying is it's probably is encased in relation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely in my arsenal of supplements.
What about
The problem is you need to take it 3 times a day. Do you know what I mean? It's really difficult to do things like that. I take one at night when I go to bed.
Yeah. What about like I know you mentioned MSM being part of the sulfur family. What are your thoughts on taurine?
I'm gonna have to back out of this. On taurine, I think you're more the expert on that. You tell us about taurine.
I made a YouTube video.
I was
hoping it would be like one of the most comprehensive research and analysis on taurine on the entire web. But I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I haven't looked into the research, but it wouldn't surprise me if taurine has some osteoarthritic protective properties. It wouldn't surprise me.
Sure. Yeah, because so the MSM is a sulfur donor for taurine production. I'm not an expert on taurine. So I need to read up. I need to watch your YouTube video, don't I?
What are some of the other herbs that your botanicals that you? I know you love to geek out on those. So like, what else? I think you mentioned rose hip.
Rose hip's another. I think NF kappa B. Inhibitor. There's quite a few different ones different ones. Yucca is probably the one that interests me the most. Yucca comes from Mexico, apparently.
What's the Latin?
It's got a really odd mechanism.
What's the Latin?
Of yucca. Oh, I don't know. Yucca, something like that. It's really weird. It works within the bowel. Okay, so inhibits protozoa and bacteria that produce an endotoxin that goes within the bloodstream to the joints and inhibits proteoglycan production. Unreal. So that's my geek out supplement, yucca. And you also got, I think you like serrapeptidase, don't you? Are you a fan of serrapeptidase or not?
I personally haven't used it myself, but I understand a little.
No, I've never. Yeah, yeah, and that's another really weird supplement. Serrapeptidase is an enzyme for anyone who doesn't know that is produced in the bowel of silkworms. Okay, by the bacteria in the bowel of silkworms. Okay, and when it's excreted, the moth that's within the cocoon can it basically protease that breaks down and dissolves the cocoon so that the moth can fly out. Really, really. So I don't know who ever thought about this. I think it's quite popular in the biohacking world. So I've always been a bit skeptical of it because I've looked at studies before, but I looked at this study recently. It's been shown to increase pro-inflammatory sort of cytokines. I think that's its main action, and it's got a significant reduction in pain. So it's difficult for me because I don't really get pain in my joints. My RA, it's just a bit sort of sometimes a bit stiff when I wake up. So if I tried it, I'm not sure if I'd really notice any difference, because I said I don't really get pain. But it might be one of those ones for people to try. But I think it doesn't go without side effects. You know, it's a protease. It's got to be enteric coated, because you're going to get some probably real gastrointestinal upset of the stomach if it's not. It needs to get there. It can actually cause joint and muscle pain as well. I think you can get skin reactions with it. So I don't think it, I think it's one to take with caution. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. But I think there's a lot of myriad of different other applications for it. I'm not sure if there's really any evidence.
Yeah, there's another pretty weird one, maybe not so weird, but it's like from traditional Chinese medicine. Is, I don't know if you've done any research on deer antler.
Deer antler, but deer antler, is that with like IGF production, IGF-1 analogs?
Yeah,
yeah. Do you know what? Yeah, I've looked at that in the sort of the bodybuilding world, and is it anabolic for athletes? And it definitely isn't. So I'm not sure about that. But all the research I've done on sort of OA, I've never seen it come up. But yeah, IGF-1 is needed for chondrocyte proliferation. But how much does it equate that if you've got an oral sort of IGF-1 analog, is it absorbed within the body? You know, peptides going through the gut. You know, we've got proteases that break them down, don't we? So I'm not sure. I'm skeptical on that one.
Yeah, yeah. I'll fill in my audience in terms of what that's used for. Not so much with the osteoarthritis, but from a TCM perspective, they recommend a deer antler to restore. It's different language, obviously. They're talking about kidney yin and kidney yang. So it actually fortifies, technically, what I think they're referring to is the adrenal glands. So it's like actually,
right,
you know, restoring the adrenal glands. Maybe it's helping with corticosteroid release. Maybe that's
yeah
the mechanism.
Yeah, I said I only ever looked it up in sort of and because it was touted as an anabolic.
Yeah,
and yeah, that's my area of interest as well. With a lot of guys who come and see me want to put a bit of size on, and you know, I was always tinkering when I was at university. I spent so much money on supplements that didn't work. I don't think I took deer antler. I might have.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Because it's been around for a while, isn't it? A lot of these supplements come and go. People realise they don't work for a certain, you know, that they've had one study like on some sort of worm, and it produces an anabolism, and then they bring it out in the supplement market, don't they? After... So, you know, there's a few out there, things like tribulus, et cetera. You know, it's not an anabolic, but that goes round in cycles of 10 to 20 years if someone will remarket it. There's a few out there, yeah.
Well, there's another one that you posted about, turkesterone.
I think that is still sort of anecdotal about from bodybuilders, isn't it? I think it's a... Yeah, so it's a sort of a plant sterol, isn't it, that I think stimulates different insects to go into maturity and like that. I don't think there's actually that evidence, much evidence on turkesterone, but there's another one called beta-ectosterone that is an anabolic agent. I think it comes from wild yam, spinach, but I think you probably, to get a decent dose, you probably need to eat about 5 kilos of spinach a day. Quinoa as well. I think it's in quinoa, and that has been shown to be, and as well, apparently in a study, one study has been done, I think as strong as there's an anabolic called Dianabol, it's an oral anabolic steroid, and it was meant to be as strong as that. I'm not so sure, but it was actually banned by the World Anti-Doping Association. So I think when something's banned by them, I think it means it works. And yeah, I tried beta-ectosterone a while back because I think I didn't train really for a year and a half during COVID. I thought I'd just concentrate on getting through it, working. And I went back to the gym for about 6 weeks. difficult to know whether it was muscle memory, ectosterone, but I felt a benefit. And I've actually got a work colleague with type 2 diabetes who's got into his training, and he definitely leaned up and got a bit stronger on ectosterone. So I think that's definitely one to look for. And it has to be used in women as well. It's not going to, you know, cause androgenic changes.
Awesome, man. Well, maybe seeing as though we're coming to the end of the show, Matt, did you want to let my listeners know where they can find you, where they can connect with you if they want to, you know, get in touch?
Yeah, sure. So I'm on Instagram at Dr. Matthew Milner. Also, I've got my website for my business, so www.evolutionsportslab.co.uk. Yeah, so yeah, but mainly the first port of call is there any social media these days, isn't it? So yeah, at Dr. Matthew Milner, double T.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt. Well, I'll make sure to leave those linked in the show notes. Yeah, it's been an awesome episode. I know my listeners will have absolutely loved this.
All good. It's good. We'll have a flat white when I'm over in Australia.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right.
Cheers. Good to see you, mate. Take care.
Thank you, everyone, for joining in to today's episode. For in-depth show notes and lessons learned, visit nofilter.media/boostyourbiology.
This has been a No Filter Media production.
Say what you want.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.